The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, good evening and welcome into this very special Facebook Live. It's our Meet the Candidate series. We've been away for a couple of weeks, back-to-back holidays, which was kind of strange. We had Valentine's Day followed by President's Day, so we missed a couple of Mondays, but we're glad to be back in the saddle again and back with a great friend of the show. He's been a guest multiple times. You probably know him as one of the chief law enforcement officers in the southeastern region of Pennsylvania, largely in Philadelphia during the tenure of President Trump. Bill McSwain, he's running for governor now as a Republican for the nomination on the Republican side, and he joins us tonight. And Mr. McSwain, it's a real pleasure to have you back, sir.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be with you.
So what have you been learning so far since you've been out of the campaign trail? You've been a declared candidate for governor for several weeks now. How many months?
I was a declared candidate since September. So what does that make it, about 5-6 months?
A good while. You were one of the earliest. Why'd you get in so early? What have you learned about this so far?
You know, I've learned that there's tremendous enthusiasm around the state for this election. Everywhere we go, whether we're in Pittsburgh like we were last week, whether we're in Erie, Wilkes-Barre, Harrisburg, up in some of the northern central counties, I was also in this past weekend. There's just tremendous amount of enthusiasm. People are ready for change. People are excited about the prospect of electing a Republican governor. And I feel blessed to be a part of this process, honestly.
You, like I said, I think most people, at least in the Philadelphia area proper. And by the way, if you have questions for Bill tonight, you can certainly send them. Just shoot a question in the comment section right below our live stream here. And as they come in, I'll ask them. If Fast Eddie's going to pop them up on the screen, and we'll just ask them as they come. So type your questions in and fire away, because I don't want to be the driver of this discussion. I've had Mr. McSwain on several a time, and so the point of tonight is for you to ask the questions of a potential gubernatorial candidate. Let me get right to one that some people have pointed out to me, and I didn't know, to be honest with you. This was something that someone pointed out to me, and I just want you to answer it and tell me whether it's so or not. It was shared with me that up until 2005, and I didn't know this, is this true that you were a registered Democrat in Chester County until 2005? True or no?
I don't know what the exact year was, but when I was much younger, I was a registered Democrat. Always considered myself a conservative Democrat, but then the Democratic Party has changed a lot. And as I became more mature in my adult years and began my career as an attorney, I switched my registration and I describe myself now as a conservative Republican, a law and order, free market, constitutional conservative. And it takes sometimes a while to really arrive at your bedrock beliefs. And I've had a lot of different experiences in my life. I've had a lot of formative experiences. And today I can tell you, I know exactly what I believe and why, and I'm out there fighting for it.
What made you a Democrat? I mean, this is not a gotcha, I promise. I'm just curious, what from your perspective, your life's perspective politically, made you a Democrat once upon a time?
I think a lot of people are influenced in their childhood by their parents, obviously. And my father was a Democrat. My father's a social worker. And before he was a social worker, he was a Presbyterian minister. And that was probably the chief initial influence. So in my 20s, I started out registering as a Democrat, but that as I came to evolve with my own opinions and experiences with the world, I knew that Republicans were the ones who had the answers, who had the policies, who had the right values to make people's lives better.
Do you, this is more of a 30,000 foot philosophical view. I know you've toured a lot, traveled a lot over the months, been talking to a lot of registered Republican voters. There is such a fundamental mistrust voters have I'm sorry to say, in our institutions, and I think justifiably so in many ways. So everyone looks at all candidates, not just you, but all candidates with heightened suspicion. We're very cynical right now about our candidates, things they say versus how they act. What would you say about that?
I would say that a lot of that suspicion is justified. A lot of times people get elected saying one thing, and then once they're in office, they don't follow through. And I'm the type of person who follows through. I am somebody who cares a lot about my reputation, and it's a reputation that I've built throughout my professional career. And if I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And in a lot of ways, I'm a stubborn person, but I think I'm stubborn in a positive way, and that I'm stubborn about the things that I think are right. And I think you saw that every day when I was U.S. attorney. I was very stubborn about enforcing the law, about protecting the rule of law, not letting any criticism affect what I was doing or the way I was directing my office. In a lot of ways, Philadelphia might be described as the most leftist, lawless jurisdiction in the country. I certainly felt that way during certain periods of my tenure when, for example, Philadelphia was pushing heroin injection sites, which I stopped and defeated. When Philadelphia was all in on the riots, which I also stepped in and stopped. So you can't care about criticism. You can't really care about being liked. You should be focused on being respected and doing the things that you have promised that you will do. And that's the type of person I am.
We're live here on Facebook with Bill McSwain. If you are tuning in, you're just tuning in and you have a question for him, he wants to be the Republican nominee to, we believe, ostensibly take on Josh Shapiro. Democrats seem to think, Bill, that he is, it's a fait accompli. They don't want to talk about anybody else. I know there are other Democrats running, but it seems the Democrat Party and the media have all decided it's going to be Josh Shapiro. So sorry, other Democrats. Whereas the Republican field is quite wide open right now, it seems. How do you read that?
Well, it looks like he is going to be the nominee, and I think that's good for me. I think that I match up really well against him. And politics is all about matchups. I mean, I'm a conservative. He's a liberal. I am someone who's never run for office before. He's a career politician. I like freedom. He likes mandates and government control. I'm an experienced, real prosecutor. He's a prosecutor in name only who's never actually prosecuted a case in his life. I'm a United States Marine, and he's definitely not. So there's lots of ways that we contrast, and I think that there's a lot of reason for Republicans to be optimistic about what's going to happen in November.
When he, and Susan, I'll get to your question here in just a second, one more for you. When he hits you, if you're the nominee, with you were a Trump U.S. attorney, you were a Trump backer, you were a Trump supporter, Bill McSwain is nothing more than the Pennsylvania version of Trump, how do you answer that charge? Because he'll come at you with it, we know.
I was proud to be a part of President Trump's administration. I was appointed by him as U.S. attorney, and I'm going to embrace that. That's all about public safety. That's all about law and order. That's all about the rule of law. That's all about standing up for the things that make our country great. So I will embrace that.
And when he says January 6th was lawlessness and insurrection, do you support that? You would answer that how?
Well, I could point to my own record, right? I'll be the one who's running for governor. As soon as January 6th happened, I condemned the violence, just like I condemned the violence in the summer of 2020. Rioting is not okay, no matter who you are. And I've been very clear about that. So he's not going to be able to paint me as somebody who was there on the Capitol lawn, you know, trying to breach the barricades. I'm a prosecutor. I'm a law and order guy. And I'm the only candidate who has any prosecutorial experience, who has any law enforcement experience, who's really stood up for the rule of law. So I'm very comfortable with my record when it comes to that. And I would love to put that up against Josh Shapiro's.
I'm cheating. I'm going to do two more, Gene. And then I promise. Then I really am. I promise two more just because they're in the same vein and I want to move off of it and not waste any more time with it. Pat Toomey voted ultimately to impeach Donald Trump. Would you have cast that same vote?
I would not. I thought that it was vindictive that they wanted to impeach him after he was out of office. I thought it was unconstitutional. I thought it was pointless. And I would not have cast that vote.
Would you have supported the certification of the election?
I did not challenge the certification of the election. I'm not part of that group. I think I'm a process person. And I think that there were certainly...
So, for instance, when Jake Corman, who's another gentleman running, as you know, from the Senate, the Pennsylvania Senate, for the governor's nomination on the Republican side, he petitioned Congress not to certify on that day. Would that have registered with you if you were the United States Senator?
I don't think there was a basis for having alternate electors, if that's sort of what you're getting at. But what Pennsylvania did, as I understand it, is that they only put forward an alternate slate based on the idea that if the court challenges succeeded. So you could certainly make an argument for that, that President Trump had the right to go into court, to present his case, and to have the courts decide the merits of different arguments. And if the courts had decided in his favor, then he was entitled to have electors who were going to vote for him. That's my understanding of what Pennsylvania did. That's a little different from some of the other states. They took a more sort of a brute force approach, but Pennsylvania did that on it, that contingency, which I think does make logical sense.
Questions for Bill McSwain. Keep them coming. I'm going to go right to them now. I'm done. I'll shut up. And Susan wants to know, how will you support small business in PA, Bill?
Small businesses have been through a terrible period in this pandemic. The way Tom Wolf picked winners and losers and shut down businesses and said who was essential and who wasn't is absolutely atrocious. Every small business is essential. Essential to the owners, essential to the workers, essential to the customers. So we need to support small business, first of all, by getting the government off their back. We need to make sure they aren't burdened by unnecessary regulations. We need to make sure that they are supported and have access to capital, and they're certainly not shut down. I think Tom Wolf did just about everything wrong when it came to harming small businesses during the pandemic. And at first, people gave him a little bit of deference, a little bit of room for error, because we were dealing with something that was brand new and we didn't know what we were facing with this pandemic. But he took far too long to come out of the lockdowns, far too long to allow businesses to operate. And unfortunately, a lot of them failed and they're not coming back. And we're still down hundreds of thousands of jobs in Pennsylvania compared to pre-pandemic. We are nowhere near the level we were at before. And that is the legacy of Tom Wolf. And that is also the legacy of Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro and his office went into court and defended everything that Tom Wolf wanted to do. The lockdowns, the school closures, all of it. So he is tied at the hip with Tom Wolf, and we cannot afford a third term of that.
This is sort of a strange question, but it's happening. In Pennsylvania, there's a very famous case right now of a transgender athlete, a former male who now swims as a female. Now, of course, it's University of Pennsylvania, so I understand this is a different scenario. But there are governors, Republican governors in other states, who have signed bans on this sort of thing. That is, at least publicly funded institutions, biological males competing against women. What are your views on that?
We've made so much progress in the past decades on providing equal opportunity to women in sports and so many different areas of life. And I don't like seeing biological males attempting to transition to female coming in and taking those opportunities away from biological women. So it bothers me. I have criticized what has happened with the Penn swimming team, and look at the way, the teammates feel about it too. Many of them signed a petition saying, this is not fair. This is not something that should be happening. And the NCAA, it looked like, was going to jump in and actually prevent the individual, Leah Thomas, from competing in the Ivy League championships. And then they lost their nerve and decided to let her compete. And she dominated against other women who are at a disadvantage. So I don't think it's fair to women, and it's not something that frankly, that I'd put up with as governor.
Would you ban it? Would you move to outright ban the competition of biological males and female sports in publicly funded institutions?
I think you would have to have some really strict rules about that really follow the science on biology, because a lot of these transgender athletes are just taking treatments, whether it's testosterone blockers or different hormone treatments, where you're still biologically your birth sex. You haven't had any sort of operation. You haven't had anything that really changes your sex, but out of convenience, you're calling yourself a different gender. I think we have to look carefully at that and make sure that the playing field is level and the playing field is fair to biological women. Because again, we've made tremendous strides here and we don't want to go backwards.
The question from Melissa, and by the way, if you have a question for Bill McSwain, please type it in the comment section right here, and we will get to as many of them as we can while we have time. Melissa wants to know, was anyone arrested and prosecuted from the Philadelphia area during the riots of 2020? I'll tack on, that is a source of obvious consternation and outright anger, particularly when we talk about and relitigate and rehash January 6th over and over and over. One of the first things that so many of us are reminded of is how our city of Philadelphia burned and was looted, and we certainly did not see equivalent outrage. In fact, some Democrats would suggest that that was righteous indignation. We hear people like Stephanie Rollins Blake once say, you need to give people the space to destroy. What of the legal ramifications of the riots of 2020, and should there have been more? And were you a part of any of that, or could you have been?
I was a big part of it. I was the only part of it. The mayor was doing nothing, Jim Kenney. The DA, Larry Krasner, was kneeling with the protesters and the rioters and did nothing. He literally let everybody go. There were some arrests made by the police, of course, but he didn't prosecute anybody. Josh Shapiro wasn't doing anything. He was running as fast as he could away from this because he didn't want to get crosswise with Krasner and other radical elements of his party. Because why? He didn't want a challenge in the primary for governor. He didn't want a challenge from the far left. And Tom Wolf was doing nothing. He was actually marching with people in Harrisburg holding up signs saying Blue Lives Murder. So this was like a defining moment in my time as U.S. attorney. I stepped in aggressively and I charged many people who torched police cars, who blew up ATMs, who started riots, who looted along the different streets in downtown Philadelphia. I was the only voice for law and order. And Chris, I stopped those riots because the word got out that McSwain and the feds were charging people. And we have some powerful statutes at our disposal. For example, if you torch a police car and there's people in the vicinity, so you're endangering them because the car could blow up, that's a 7-year mandatory minimum penalty under federal law. And so the word got out and there were some highly publicized prosecutions, and then the riots stopped. We had terrible riots at the end of May, in the beginning of June, and then we had protests for the rest of the summer after I got involved and the feds got involved. So I don't think it's any exaggeration to say that the U.S. Attorney's Office, under my leadership, literally stopped Philadelphia from burning to the ground.
If you have a question for Bill McSwain, please submit it to us here in the comments section and I'll ask it. Let me tack on a question about Democrats' reaction to people like Larry Krasner. It seems like even those who, we've seen people that are out of office, the Charles Ramseys, the Mayor Nutters, even Seth Williams, who, you know, himself got out of prison not too long ago. But those men, for instance, have been some of the loudest critics, fellow Democrats, who've said this guy is out of touch and is letting our city really rot with crime. Yet, current modern Democrats who hold office, like Jim Kenney, like Josh Shapiro, like Tom Wolf, they won't talk about him. What's that dynamic? What's going on there?
Well, I think that they're cowardly. I think that they're afraid. They think that it's going to hurt them politically if they speak up about it. I think that's Mayor Kenney's approach. I think that's Josh Shapiro's approach. But Larry Krasner's radical experiment has failed. And let's look at the numbers. It is obvious. As soon as he came into office, homicides and shootings immediately spiked and have continued to go up and up in every year of his 4 years, culminating in 21 when we set an all-time record for homicides, an all-time record for shootings. It is absolute carnage. And it's a carnage that's being felt almost exclusively by minority communities. It's one of the points that I've made frequently as U.S. attorney is that over 90% of the victims when it came to homicides and shootings are African-American and Latino. So if Black lives matter, and of course they do, you should be loudly supporting the police and you should be loudly condemning Larry Krasner, because people are literally dying because of his policies. And it is, I mean, you can literally draw, you can connect the dots. And I did it in press conferences as U.S. attorney. I connected the dots between the people who were let out on the street because of Krasner's policies, things like undercharging cases or not pursuing probation violations or dismissing cases, all these reasons why he was putting people out on the street. They are the trigger men. They are the people that are committing the homicides and the shootings in Philadelphia. So we can have public safety in Philadelphia, but not under a regime where Larry Krasner's overall goal is to decarcerate and just get people out of prison. And he's really putting the cart before the horse there.
Yeah, what legally, Bill, can a Governor McSwain do to a district attorney of Philadelphia, Larry Krasner? What could a Governor McSwain do about him today, let's say, if things were changed and different and you were governor?
There's a lot of things you can do. And one of the things that I have proposed, because there's such a crisis going on in Philadelphia right now, is a motivated governor and somebody with law enforcement experience like me to lead the charge can get him removed. And the way you do that is you pass a state constitutional amendment saying that the governor can appoint district attorneys in cities of the first class, of which there's only one in Pennsylvania, and that's Philadelphia. And that would be respecting the democratic process. It wouldn't be coming in and trying to impeach him, which is not something that I think would even work, because you don't have the votes in the Senate for an impeachment in the state Senate. But you could have the legislature pass that amendment in successive sessions and then get that on the ballot as soon as the spring of 23, and then people in the state can vote on that state amendment to see if it's something that they desire. And if so, then you could be rid of Krasner within months of my inauguration.
So that process, just so I'm clear, that's an amendment to replace a district attorney by the governor's choosing, if it's voted on by the citizenry of Pennsylvania to amend the Constitution to allow that?
What I proposed is a state constitutional amendment where the governor could appoint the DA of Philadelphia. And this is not radical when you think about...
Is that a one-time on? I'm sorry. Procedurally, it's just interesting to me. Is that a one-off, or that would be a permanent amendment to the Constitution?
Permanent. And look at New Jersey, for example. In New Jersey, the governor appoints all the DAs. There are states in which the governor appoints all the DAs, and in some states, they elect them, like we have in Pennsylvania, but it's determined by our Constitution. What I'm saying is that there is such a crisis of public safety going on right now in Philadelphia that we should carve out Philadelphia, respect the democratic process by passing a state constitutional amendment, and then have Governor McSwain appoint the DA and get rid of Krasner. There's lots of other things you can do short of that as well. You can support the police with funding. You can have the state police and even the National Guard take a more active role in Philadelphia. And you can also use your bully pulpit. How great would it be to have a governor who actually supports the police instead of a governor who, like I said, is marching in the streets of Harrisburg with people holding up signs with the vicious lie that blue lives matter, or a governor who sends out a press release on Juneteenth equating the police with racist murderers? Those are just monstrous words that Governor Wolf has used to describe the police. And using that bully pulpit is a very important part of your job as governor. You can influence public opinion. You can influence culture. And I will always stand with the police. And I have been a friend of the police during my entire career. Again, I'm the only candidate who has any law enforcement experience. And I am the law and order candidate who's going to bring public safety to all the neighborhoods in Pennsylvania, because people deserve it.
Bill McSwain wants to be the Republican nominee to take on Josh Shapiro this fall and be the next governor of Pennsylvania. If you have a question for him, please submit it. We're going to get through as many as we can before he needs to run here at 20 till the hour. Kathy wants to know, how would you handle a future emergency? What is your view on executive power. You know that, speaking of amending the Constitution, Pennsylvanians did so. They felt it had gotten so out of hand that ultimately they said after 3 weeks of an emergency declaration, the legislature has to sign off on going any further. That was what the voters thought about it. What do you think about executive power?
My view on executive power is that it is not unlimited. I'm not running for king. I'm running for governor. And as governor, you have to work with the other branches of the government, particularly the legislature. And so I would want input from the legislature. The legislature is certainly going to put limits on what the governor does. And the people in the last ballot question said that they want limits on the governor's executive power. I'm very comfortable with that. I want to respect the will of the people. One way you respect the will of the people, of course, is by executing and using your powers as governor when you're elected. But you also respect the will of the people by showing the legislature respect, because the legislature is also elected. So my general view on executive power is that it's limited and that it has been abused. And in the last couple of years by Governor Wolf, he has acted like a petty tyrant in a lot of ways. And that is not the way that I would run my administration.
Linda Kearns asks, Governor Wolf signed Act 77, which violated the Pennsylvania Constitution and a long line of legal precedent. What is the governor's responsibility when the legislature sends a bill that violates either the PA or United States Constitution? And this is a great question, because it appears that a Republican legislature and many Republicans, including some who are running against you for this nomination, voted for Act 77. I don't know whether all of them knew or understood or even properly reviewed whether it was constitutional, but it's clearly not. So what are we to make of Republicans that voted for something that was so flatly unconstitutional, but now is law because a Democrat governor signed it into law and likes it so well?
Frankly, Chris, the people who voted for Act 77, I think, showed terrible judgment. And we don't want terrible judgment in our governor. And to answer Linda's question directly, hopefully you can head some of that off at the pass as governor. If you think that the legislature has something brewing that is unconstitutional or illegal, you use your powers and your influence and your persuasive abilities to say, hey, I don't want that on my desk. That's not something that should land on my desk. Okay, we are going to respect the Pennsylvania Constitution. We're going to respect the federal constitution. But if something clearly unconstitutional lands on my desk, my job is to veto it.
Excuse me. Go ahead, Bill.
Say, but I would use that veto power very carefully. Again, I'm not running to be king. I'm not running to be a tyrant. I'm not running to be a version of anything like Tom Wolf. You have to be very careful with your veto pen. You have to respect the will of the people. And hopefully you can head off any potentially unconstitutional bills at the pass. Act 77 is unconstitutional. It never should have become law. It's caused unnecessary complication and confusion in our electoral process. And even our governor violated Act 77. The guy who signed it had his ballot illegally harvested by his wife. So that should tell you right there that this is a system that needs reform.
Joe Biden, a few weeks ago, came to Pittsburgh, and on that morning, a bridge collapsed. Turns out it was a bridge that was funded, and not a federal bridge, not a bridge that was even on a list of repaired bridges to be repaired. Yet Joe Biden and Democrats really made a big to-do about that was somehow a Republican funding issue that bridge collapsed. Not true, ultimately, we know. But we also know Pennsylvanians pay the highest gas tax in the country for roads and bridges. And the roads and bridges aren't in great shape. So the specific question from Lisa is, what's your opinion of Biden's massive infrastructure bill? I guess that's a spending question in general, but also we have a pretty healthy tax in Pennsylvania for things like this ourselves. And with gas as high as it is, maybe going to $150 a barrel, yikes. So what's your impression of all this?
Biden is spending too much money. We have the highest inflation in over 40 years, and it's getting worse. And now with the war in Ukraine, gas prices are probably going to see even more of a spike, and hardworking families are going to feel even more pain in the pocketbook. I mean, the economy went into a coma, a artificial coma during the pandemic. And so to come out of the pandemic, what we should have done is just let the economy recover as things went back to normal and people went back to work. And instead, Biden tried to use it as an excuse to try to pass all sorts of liberal and progressive giveaways and just blow out the spending. And so he has, ironically, that has caused the recovery to be stalled, to be worse than if we had just left things alone, because now we're dealing, among other things, with this massive inflation. And that's something that really starkly reminds people that we need a government that is fiscally responsible. We need a government that doesn't blow out the spending. And we need a government, I told you at the beginning, and I think of myself as a limited government constitutional conservative. And this is part of that. We need to be fiscally responsible. And that includes not spending recklessly, not driving up inflation, not passing the buck to our children and our grandchildren. We need to get our house in order. And Tom Wolf hasn't done that. And Josh Shapiro wouldn't do that.
Interesting question from Kathy. I think responding to your constitutional amendment, what would happen down the road if you got that amendment passed that you talked about replacing a DA and a Democrat then ultimately turns around, wins the governor's seat and appoints a liberal district attorney? Are you basically trading one bad system for another?
I would say that you literally can't do any worse than Krasner. No matter who a Democrat governor down the road would appoint to the DA of Philadelphia, you couldn't do worse than Krasner. So this is dealing with the problem, the immediate crisis. It's a short-term solution and it's a long-term solution, because it would rid Philadelphia of Larry Krasner and it would rid them of any future Larry Krasners, I believe.
I asked President Trump on Saturday night down in Orlando at CPAC if he felt election integrity was short up here in Pennsylvania. He thought it had been dealt with. He said, I think we're still discovering the problems with it. He said it was a scam. It was a sham. He said hundreds of thousands of ballots. I don't know ultimately where you come down. Maybe we've talked about it before. Forgive me if I've forgotten. How do you see the outcome of election 2020? What happened? Was there fraud? Was it strictly? I know you already believe it was unconstitutional. I think we've talked about that as a matter of law. Multiple attorneys general across the country went to the Supreme Court with it. We know the court ultimately didn't take it up. So setting constitutionality aside, which is a big deal, and I think independent of fraud, it was an unconstitutional election based on that. But did you see meaningful fraud? Do you think there was? And if you're governor, can you fix it?
First of all, Chris, I don't think you can set aside unconstitutionality. That is a big, big deal. And especially now with Act 77 being ruled unconstitutional, we know that we voted in 2020 under a system that shouldn't have existed. And you can speculate what difference it would have made, but it clearly would have made some difference. People would have, instead of millions of people voting in a way that we had never used before, who knows what the result would have been. So the people who are angry about 2020 and feel like that the Democrats did everything possible to rig the management and the administration of the election, they've got a legitimate beef. And a lot of it has to do with the unconstitutionality. And one thing that concerns me is that we need a decision quickly out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court about Act 77, because when the challenges came through in 2020 about the election, the Supreme Court said, well, we can't take away people's right to, we can't take away the ballot. They've already voted. The election's already happened. So we're not going to say that Act 77 is unconstitutional. I'm afraid that now the Pennsylvania Supreme Court might be trying to run out the clock and saying, well, you can vote in an election up to 50 days before the primary, and some people have already voted by mail. So we can't reach the merits on this now in 22 either. I mean, I wouldn't put it past the Supreme Court to be playing those kind of games. That Commonwealth Court opinion is a very strong opinion. I've read all 51 pages of it, I believe is what it is. And the only way that Act 77 can be upheld is if the Pennsylvania Supreme Court overrules hundreds of years of precedent. And I'm worried that they're trying to run out the clock so they can have the same reason that they avoided the issue in 2020. They can say, well, it's just moot. Okay, the election's already started, so this is just moot. So I don't think you can put aside the constitutionality, but I also think that there were things about the administration of the election where Governor Wolf appointed a partisan, Kathy Buchvar, who always tried to tilt the election in the Democrats' favor. She was the Secretary of the Commonwealth. She subsequently resigned in disgrace based on a separate scandal. But when you talk about the inconsistent guidance that was given to different election boards throughout the state, when you talk about the tens of million dollars of Zuckerbucks from Mark Zuckerberg and his organization going to areas of the state to pump up the Democratic turnout, that's one of the things that I would want to do as governor, is I would want to ban private funding of elections. It needs to be fair and even. And I don't want any partisans to occupy the office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth. I want things to be fair, and I want people to perceive them as fair, because this is another thing, Chris. Republicans don't want less people to vote. They actually want more people to vote. And the way you get more people to vote is when people have faith in the election. And so we need to do the things to give everybody faith. And I want tons of people to vote in 22. I think
And as you know, in Chester County, this is something that really had not been, I mean, to my knowledge, as a Chester County resident for the last decade, I had not heard of this until this last cycle. There is literally a school board election in the Downingtown area at this hour that's being contested in court because some ballots were found late. It seems like it's getting worse. It's regressing. Systems, even in the suburbs that had worked before and there really didn't seem to be problems, now it seems like we're finding ballots. This mail-in system is getting worse and convoluting things. What would a Governor McSwain do about that?
A Governor McSwain would take us back to the system that has served us for generations, which is in-person balloting. I believe in the sanctity of the voting booth. In the voting booth, nobody can influence you. Nobody can fill out your ballot for you. Nobody can illegally harvest it for you. That doesn't mean that some people can't vote by mail. If you're in the military and you have to have an absentee ballot, or you are going to be out of town for legitimate reasons, or if you physically can't get to the polls, yes, we need to make sure that you are able to vote. Because again, we want more participation in democracy. But if you're an able-bodied person and you're in town on election day, you should go to the voting booth and you should actually enjoy that process. It's sort of part of the American experience, going to the polls, talking to your neighbors, seeing the poll workers, and going in there and getting your little sticker that you might put on your shirt. But that's all part of the process of participating in democracy. I don't think we want to de-emphasize that. I think we want to emphasize it. So Act 77 is already unconstitutional, but if it still exists when I'm governor, I will get rid of it. And that's how we're not going to have the kind of situation where after elections, including in Chester County, this is not just all in Philadelphia or other urban areas that have a reputation for a well-earned reputation for election fraud. Even places like Chester County, you have ballots showing up sort of out of nowhere, and yes, it's creating distrust. Even if there's no fraud going on, even if ultimately these are legitimate ballots, it's creating distrust, and we need to have a winner or a loser on election night. That's one of the things that gives people faith in the election.
Just briefly, because I know you need to run. Today, the news, the Pennsylvania GOP has urged the Supreme Court of the United States to toss this recent congressional map. Pennsylvania Republicans, reading this from The Hill, Bill, asked the Supreme Court today to overturn a state court-approved congressional map, arguing the Democrat-controlled court exceeded its authority by imposing the map without the legislature's approval. They did this 10 years ago. I remember the last census. This was just when I'd gotten to Pennsylvania. This was a story that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did it then. They did it again. The Republicans are appealing it again. How should it have gone 10 years ago? Here we are 10 years later.
Redistricting is a legislative process. It's something the legislature is supposed to have control over. And when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court took control of that before, they were wrong. And the only recourse you have is to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, which should step in and do something about it and reiterate that it's a legislative process. Or failing that, you have to replace some of these Supreme Court justices. You have to win elections and put Republicans on the bench who are going to respect the rule of law and going to respect the different branches of government and don't think of themselves as black-robed kings who are going to come in and decide things that they have no right to decide. Unfortunately, we did win the Supreme Court election in 21 in Pennsylvania. Kevin Brobson was elected to the Supreme Court, but there's still a 5-2 Democrat majority on that court. There are going to be 3 seats up for election in a few years. And we need to go out and win those elections and make sure that we have conservative, rule of law oriented, judicial restraint oriented justices on that court.
I saw Adam snuck in a question there at the end. I just wanted to ask you quickly, right to work. He wanted to know, would you support the idea of making Pennsylvania a right to work state?
I think that right to work has been a good thing in a lot of other states that we've seen. And you can certainly learn from other states, the laboratories of democracy. And it is something that I would support.
So I'll close by letting you, I guess, make your final pitch and tell folks how they can be helpful.
Well, I'm running for governor because I love Pennsylvania. I'm a native Pennsylvanian. I've lived a life of public service. And I'm the guy who can win. I'm the guy who is perfectly situated to go up against Josh Shapiro for many of the reasons that we've already discussed. I think it's going to be a very strong year for Republicans in 22 if we have the right candidates. So vote for McSwain on May 17th, and then we'll go on to victory in November. And I can tell everybody out in this watching across the Commonwealth, help is on the way.
Bill, it's been great spending some time with you. Thank you for it tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be with you. I look forward to appearing with you in the future.
Hope that you will. And we will be back at it tomorrow morning live at 6 a.m. on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Good night.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.